You're listening to WARA AM 1320. Fight the power. Fight the Facebook that be. Fight the Facebook. Fight the Facebook that be. Fight the Facebook. Fight the Facebook that be. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to WARA AM 1320, America in the Now. I am your host, Henry Roman, and not only am I angry, I am super angry today. If you want to hear an angry Puerto Rican, you're going to be listening to this show. If you want to listen, if you want to hear an angry American or an angry Puerto Rican or just anybody who's angry, maybe you should listen to Easy Listening 105.3, or that's actually in Hawaii. But I am furious today. I am so angry, and I'll tell you why. I am just a little guy. I'm a nobody. I just happen to be able to have 2 hours on a radio show every week for how long, I don't know. Whether one person listens to me or 100 people listen to me, over and over again, I'm approached by people that are white, people that are black, people that are Hispanics, people of all races, colors, creeds, and orientations, and they tell me, Henry, I'm so glad that even if you only have a little show, I can listen to you because you say what I think and I cannot say. Because if I were to say the things that you say, I would be ostracized. I would probably even lose my job. I'm a nobody, guys. I don't have a big head. I'm a kid from the streets, and I had someone that is a friend of mine who told me I don't have a ghetto pass, and I'll tell you, if he had been around me, I think I probably would have attacked him. Because with that statement, he took away everything about my journey, about how I had to fight my way through childhood, how I learned to be wise to the streets at age 9. I know what it's like to grow up in a tough city. I know what it's like to grow up in the ghettos. I know what it's like to be a minority kid, okay? I know what it's like to be discriminated against. But if people want to be jerks and idiots, that's up to them. I also believe in the system. I believe, I believe in the goodness of not only America, but I believe in the goodness of Americans. Americans are a fair people. Are we perfect? Are we angels? No. No. Do we make mistakes? Have we made mistakes? Yes. Have we done stupid stuff? Absolutely. But after we do stupid stuff, eventually we come to our senses. I think it was Churchill who said it best. Americans will do the right thing after they've exhausted every other option. But we do the right thing. That's the difference between people in other countries and us. Because in other countries, they whitewash everything. Oh, no, we don't have a problem. This is a workers' paradise. Yeah, tell that to the Uyghurs in China, whose women are being sterilized so they don't get too prolific in their breeding, whose young men are being brainwashed, they're being indoctrinated to hate God. They may pronounce God's name differently than mine. They may call him Allah, and I may call him Jesus. I may call him the Mashiach. I may call him the great, all the things that I call God. I call him my friend. But simply because they choose, pardon me, to invoke the name of God, the atheist communist system is sending them to indoctrination camps to teach them, to try to brainwash them into denying their God. And it's on the way here, you fools. For those of you who have been voting Democratic all your life, I'm sorry, I'm going to offend you. You are a fool. Because the Democratic left has been taken over by Satanists. It's been taken over by atheists. It's been taken over by people who wish to destroy you and take everything that you've got. They want to tax you into oblivion. If you're a white person, they want to saddle you with guilt and reparations for things you had nothing to do with. Nothing. What in the name of Sam Hill do the famine Irish have anything to do with paying reparations for slavery when they arrived in the late 1880s? As a matter of fact, when they arrived in the 1860s, they were enlisted to fight on both sides of the conflict. Are they responsible? Why? Because they're white? When I say that the left has been taken over by Satan, I'm not exaggerating. Let's talk about this. One of my friends always extols BLM, Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, my friends. That's why I'm against abortion. That's why I have a fit when I talk about the fact that more black babies are aborted in New York City than are born. It is a genocide. Planned Parenthood has many clinics in minority neighborhoods. The goal is to limit our numbers. They would much rather have immigrants come into this country who are in need of programs, of welfare, because that guarantees a Democratic vote. But when you have blacks and Hispanics that are born here, after two generations, guess what? They become Americans and they become conservatives. What we are witnessing is a resurgence of ethnic pride. And with ethnic pride comes the realization that we've got to take matters into our own hands. And I am talking like a member of a minority group right now. If blacks and Hispanics are failing in this country, it is no one's fault but our own. 50 years ago, granted, if you were a man of color, your options were limited. My grandfather, and those of you who've listened to the show know this, my grandfather died because he didn't have $2 to pay for medication. All the money that he had in the world at age 62 was $50, and that was to pay for his funeral. And that's what was used to pay for the pine box and for the cemetery plot and for the cheese and crackers that were given out during his wake. He could not have dreamed of the life that his grandson has. Why? Because of this country, because of the American system that gave me the opportunity to rise to my highest level of competence or incompetence, depending on the day. That is this country. That is what I've been talking about for the last 2 years on this show. That is what I've been saying on Facebook. And guess what Facebook did? That little white twerp in California, Zuckerberg, cut off my access. You know why? Because the last post, I dare to say, people of color, it's time to wake up and make your own choices. The days of people telling you how to vote because you're of a certain color and if you don't vote, you're a traitor to your cause, those days are over. Look what happened to 50 Cent. 50 Cent spoke and he was knocked down in public by a white woman who used to be his girlfriend. But he understood. He got the message. It wasn't her. It was who she represented. She represented the establishment of these uber white liberals who don't want 50 Cent to get out of his place. Don't let him make a little money. As long as he stays on the plantation. As long as he toes the party line. As long as he knows where his place is. Don't forget, boy, where you belong. And that's at the bottom. And we'll throw some crumbs your way. I have no problem with white Republicans and white conservatives. You know why? Because when they see me, they see a man. They see a patriot. They see a veteran. They see a man who worked his way up. They see the embodiment of the American dream. What does a white liberal see? They see some uppity spick. That's right. That's how they see me. They see me as some uppity spick who dares to say things that offends them. That I don't know my place. And this spick decided to put it on Facebook. Vote your conscience. You make your own decisions about how you wish to identify yourself, right? The liberal media keeps saying, oh, this Hispanic American, this Puerto Rican. You know what? I'm an American first. My parents came from Puerto Rico. But I'm using my race card to make a point, guys. And I hope you understand. I'm trying to make a point. The point is, the left is using racial politics to divide us. And God forbid, God help us, those of us that have any kind of couple nickels to rub together or trying to, you know, move up in the world, if we get out of line, because they're going to tap us down. And that's what Facebook did to me. They cut off my access. Why? Because of the 5,000 followers that I had, over 1,000 of them were people of color, conservatives like me. And we were collaborating, and we were congratulating each other, and we were giving each other courage. Because it's not easy, my friends. It's not easy to be a person of color and a conservative. One of my friends, gentleman whom I love very much, Caucasian gentleman, slapped me on the back. He's a big dude, too. When he slaps me on the back, it hurts. I don't have the heart to tell him, dude, be gentle. I'm 60 years old. It hurts when you slap me on the back like that. He says, Henry, I don't know how you do it, man. You're a heck of a lot braver than I am. Because you say things and you get flack and you just get right back up and you just keep saying what you're saying. He says, I admire you. You're my kind of guy. And he slapped you on the back again. I'm telling you, I'm going to cough up half a lung if he keeps doing that. But, you know, I understand the affection, and I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. I really do. I have so many people that I'm grateful for. I'm really grateful for. I'm grateful to be in Massachusetts, even though there are days I hate living here. And it's because of the political environment and the weather, both. But I have made such wonderful friends, wonderful friends. I want to give a shout out to actually one of my friends, Wayne. I was just mentioning that, you know, I needed to get ready for the winter, and I was worried about the fact that we may lose electricity, that there may be some strife, and I needed to get a wood stove, you know, as a backup heat source for my house. He says, are you looking for a stove? I said, yeah. He goes, oh, I got one in my house. I'll bring it over to you. I said, no, I'll buy. He goes, what do you mean buy? We're friends. You need a stove? I got a stove. I'm not using it. I'll bring it to your house. He puts it in his truck. This is a 500-pound stove. He gets it over to this truck. I go to his house. My son and I, we load it in. He brings his truck over. I want to give him money for gas. He refuses. He says, what are friends for? That's the kind of stuff that makes me, you know, I'm an emotional guy. It chokes me up to have friends like that. He's a conservative. He knows that in our societies, we have to help each other. That it's not government that provides the solutions. It's your neighbors. It's your friends. It's when you're down, that's when I can help you, and that's when you can help me. I'm about to get emotional. I'm going to take a break. But thank you, Wayne. And you are listening to WARA AM 1320 in Attleboro, and I am just like Sidney Lumpet from the 1976 Movie Network. I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. That is the phrase that I am hearing over and over again. And my friends, I don't know about you, but there are days I get a little bit scared. Why are so many people angry? Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about why I think the left is angry. And then I'm going to tell you why I'm angry. By the way, I'm running for state senate. I am a write-in candidate for Bristol and Norfolk counties. So if you see Feeney on the ballot on that slot, go ahead and put Henry Roman. I know I'm not going to win. I don't have a chance in hell of winning. But if I get a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand votes from people that are saying, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, perhaps our legislators will listen to us. Because if they don't, we know what the alternatives can be. And it's not pretty. It is time that our elected officials listen to the American public. And I'm not talking about the little one percenters out there the little ones who sprinkle fairy dust or something on them, and they think that they represent everyone, and everyone has to kowtow to them because they're special, because they're unique. I have news for you. Every human being that's alive on this earth right now is unique. There will never be another person like you, ever. There has never been anyone like you in the history of humanity or of creation, and there will never, ever be another person like you after you leave this earth. You are a unique individual, more precious than any gemstone that's ever been created in the universe. Because there will only ever be one of you. Think about that. You are truly precious, more precious than anything. And what you have to contribute is precious. I have no problem with people who don't think like me. Not at all. As a matter of fact, I encourage it. If you dare, 508-222-1320. That's my number. 508-222-1320. Call in if you dare. If you're opposed to me, you'll notice that I'm not a bad guy. I'm not dangerous. I'm not going to threaten you because I disagree with you. I'm not going to assault you because we have differences of opinion. If you insult me as a man, like a man, if you insult my manhood, we're going to have a problem. Because in the old days, a man did not talk to another man in a certain way, because there were consequences. But these days, there are no consequences. The left, why is the left so angry? Because they're acting like little spoiled children that are not getting their way. Because they have been indoctrinated to think that just because if they want it, then it must be good. And because their professor said this is the way things should be, if only everybody were the same. You know what, my friends? I'm sorry. I have bad news for you. Someone's always going to have an advantage over you. They may have the advantage of better looks. You may be ugly. Sorry. You're beautiful to your parents and to God, but you may be ugly. I mean, okay. You may be attractive in another country, right? But forcing people to like you because you're different than maybe the majority, that's not going to change anything. You're still going to be ugly. There was this historic rivalry and unfriendship. I'm not even sure what the term. This tension between the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Winston Churchill, and Lady Astor, of UK. They kind of hated each other. And I think it was probably this they were either frenemies or they were attracted to each other, but that attraction turned somehow into something different. But Lady Astor always made it a point to try to insult the Prime Minister, and he always had a good comeback. One time, he said to her, or she said to him, "Sir, you are drunk." And he looked at her and he says, "Yes, madam, I am drunk, but you are ugly. And in the morning, I shall be sober, but you shall still be ugly." Another time, Lady Astor says to the Prime Minister, "Sir, if you were my husband, I would give you poison." And Winston Churchill responds, "Ma'am, Lady Astor, if I were your husband, I would drink it." The left is angry because of perceived slights, because of perceived injustices, because of perceived this, because of perceived that. It's all about perceptions. There is perception and there is reality. The perception is that we should all have equal opportunity. Absolutely. The reality is that some people are going to have more access than others. A friend of mine is a business owner, right? When his friend needs a job, he's going to call one of his other friends that maybe, let's say I had a friend who owned a business, and his daughter was, she has a master's degree in museum curation, right? Not a whole lot of jobs in museum curation. So what did he do? He had a friend that was on the board of one of the museums and said, hey, the next time you have an opening, would you consider my daughter? Now, my friend wasn't like super rich, because what if he was super rich, he would have said, hey, here's $1 million for your museum. But by the way, my daughter needs a job. Why don't you give her a job? No, he asked for a favor, a friend of a friend. What happened? She got a job. When there was an opportunity, an opening became available, she was asked to come in. She interviewed. She did well. She has a master's. She's qualified. She had experience. Well, she beat out the other candidates. She got the job. Was it fair or was it unfair? Well, it depends on your perspective. She was qualified. She had experience. She knew the job. She had an edge. She used it. Is that fair? Well, you know, depends. If you're the girl who really wanted to work in this field, who has a passion for museum curation and is good at her job, because I've seen her work, she was good. She got the job. Was it because of her father or because of her skills? Well, I don't know. I don't know the other candidates. I didn't have a chance to see the other candidates, but I saw her. Unfortunately, we also have the Hunter Biden deals where, you know, if you believe there's some kind of Russian conspiracy, why is it that you believed that Trump was part of a Russian conspiracy, but you don't believe, I guess you believe in Russian conspiracy because you believe that there was a Trump Russian conspiracy. So obviously there must be a Hunter Russian conspiracy, right? Right? Yeah, right. Hunter Biden used his father's position, 47 years in the political arena. The guy's got some influence. He used that influence. The entire family used the influence to enrich themselves. The Biden crime family enriched themselves using influence. So for those of you who keep rattling your little maracas and sabers and all the other things to make noise, to say that the Republicans are unfair, that we're people of privilege and all this other nonsense, look at your candidate and look at how his family. How about the Clintons? Oh, yeah. Hillary Clinton said it best. She said, oh, when we left, we didn't have anything. We were broke. Well, that's not the case anymore. They're filthy rich. They're doing very, very well. Why is that? Because they leveraged their political connections into money. The Clinton Foundation is now kaput, but it was very well funded because everyone assumed that she was going to be president. And it's like, you wash my hands now, and I'll wash yours later. If you don't believe that, if you don't think that happens, of course it does. What we need to do is we need to make sure that we create an environment where the best people flow to the top, with the understanding that there are going to be people that are going to take advantage of their connections and all. It's the reality. That is the reality. It is what it is. You can complain about it all you want, but that's what it is. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Tenure Roman. I am very angry today. You probably hear it in my voice. We'll be right back. You are listening to America in the Now with your host, Tenure Roman, and I have broken Facebook's law because I dared to say, people of color, it is time to vote your conscience and use your own minds and stop listening to what other people are telling you to do. It is time for us to make our own way. It is time for us to make decisions, difficult decisions, ourselves. It is time for us to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And because of that, because I have 1,000 followers on Facebook that are of color, representing 20% of my 5,000 followers, I was cut off from Facebook because I am a disruptor. I violated their terms of service, which means I better not get off the plantation. I better know my place, and my place is back in the ghettos. That's what that Zuckerberg fool in California wants. He wants all people of color to shut up, take your welfare, and take your drugs, and let the white liberal ruling class continue to keep us in our place. Because I dared to say that and to confront that, I've been cut off from Facebook. And you know what? I don't really miss it. I do miss Facebook Marketplace. It's kind of fun to buy and sell stuff. But you know what? I'll just use Craigslist. Or I'll just create a fake, you know, some fake Facebook account to sell my stuff or to buy stuff. This is where we're at, my friends. If you think that there isn't a concerted effort to take over this country, you're fooling yourself. If you've never voted before, this is the time for you to get off your duff, quit complaining, and get to the polls. Because the alternative is not something that I wish to even talk about. And I've been kind of hinting around about it. And one of the things that we are not allowed to do is obviously advocate violence. And I never, ever advocate violence. Never. I am on the record saying that. And I've been saying over and over again, I'm afraid of the consequences of political decisions that are made that are contrary to the desires and wants of the population. Because we have a bunch of people in this community that all they want to do is they want to raise their families, they want to live in safe communities, they want to go about their business unhindered by government, and they don't want to be constantly told that they are evil because they're white, that they owe something to someone else because their ancestors obviously somewhere, somehow, in some way, did something wrong to someone else of another race. I'm sick of that. Stop it. Stop that nonsense. I'm sick of racial politics. I'm sick of the Democrats constantly using racial politics to create a division in this country. When I was told by a liberal that I should be happy where I'm at and that I'm making too much trouble, I need to know my place. I should have knocked his teeth out when he said that to me. And I think the next time someone does that, I think I will. I'll be tempted to. Let me put it that way. I'm a man of peace, but a man can only take so much. A man can only take so much before he decides to settle matters. And that's why it's so important that we do something. We go to the ballot. So I early voted with my son. And I'll tell you what, it was disappointing. It was very disappointing. I got the, I'm a member of the NRA, right? Take that for whatever you want. Because I like them. I'm a member because I like their magazine, okay? Not because I carry guns. Whether I choose to carry a weapon or not is my personal choice and basically none of your business. But I am a member of the NRA. And this month, there was a ballot insert showing all of the candidates for Massachusetts, for all the federal, state, and local offices. And I'll tell you what, man, I was really disappointed. Because in just about every district, there's a Democrat running unopposed. And I know what my situation was and my experience was because I'm a write-in candidate for Norfolk and Bristol County. So if you see Paul Feeney, don't vote for him. Put write-in and vote Henry Roman. I don't care if I don't win. I'm not going to win. I know that. But I sure would like to get at least 2,000 votes to make a point that people listen to this show, that people know about me and that people actually listen to what I'm saying and that they feel the same way I feel. And they think the same way I think. And they want the same things that I want for Massachusetts. And it's not more laws to take more money out of my paycheck. It's not more laws. It's not more declarations. And it's not the removal of statues that I want. I want nicer and better roads. I want safer streets. I want candidates that are in my interest, that are looking out for my community by ensuring that we have what we need in terms of clean water, clean air, so on and so forth. Instead, I see all this stupid legislation being passed in the State House to outlaw some figure of speech that from now on, when you go into a store, you can't say thank you, sir, thank you, ma'am. Now you have to say thank you, fellow dweller of the planet Earth, or some other nonsense. That's what they're wasting their time arguing about, whether you can use an honorific he or she in front of someone's title or Mr. and Miss. This is the nonsense that we're dealing with. And there are days that it drives me crazy. It drives me absolutely freaking bonkers. Like I said, this may very well be my last show because I'm so full of vitriol and anger. And unfortunately, I did have one or two words that kind of slipped out. And I apologize to the radio station because unfortunately it was a YouTube video and I hadn't pre-screened it before I played it. So even if some of my words are not appropriate, I hope that you hear my passion. I hope that you hear my sincerity. I certainly hope that you hear what I'm trying to tell you. And that is, there comes a time when you have to get busy. There's a time when you have to get engaged. This is not one of those times where you throw your hands up and say, there's nothing I can do. There is. November 2nd is 2 days from today, Tuesday. You can make a difference. Massachusetts, the chances of Massachusetts becoming a red state, I think there's a better chance of Jesus returning to the earth than us becoming a red state. But we can still vote in. We can still vote for a Republican congresswoman. We can still vote for a Republican senator. We can still vote for Republican legislators where we have the option. And in places where we don't have an option because all there is either a Democrat candidate or nobody, then do what my son did. He voted for me. He put Henry Roman for state senator for Bristol and Norfolk County, and I appreciate that. But for all the other things where he didn't know of a viable write-in candidate, he colored the write-in candidate and he put none. That would be lovely if a Democratic candidate got 5,000 votes and none got 10,000 votes. He'll still get the office, or she'll still get the office, of course. But the message has been sent that we prefer someone else than the person here. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Man, I love Marvin Gaye. Whenever I feel emotional, it seems like I always go back to my childhood, to the 60s and 70s and the music of protest. And actually, I also like the rap music from the 90s. It seems like the rap music of the 90s was talking about the political conditions and the sense of outrage and disenfranchisement that African Americans had. And I'd say it was, you know, very legitimate, some of those feelings, people feeling trapped. But what were the options? You know, what were the alternatives? President Trump has really done a wonderful job of providing options to people of color. He has created enterprise zones in inner city neighborhoods where people of color and others can set up businesses and they can get easy access to low-cost loans, to grants, in order to develop businesses where people that live in the area can work in that area. Because I'll tell you, Republicans build, Democrats destroy. Look at the cities right now that are having all these protests. What are they burning? The black communities are burning down their own neighborhoods. How long do you think it's going to be before these neighborhoods come back? I mean, it breaks my heart, man, to see this. Because I know what the consequences are. It's going to be that. It's going to be forever before they get another, you know, Whole Foods in there. These corporations, they toe the party line. They'll take risks to go into these neighborhoods, right? But boom, when there's conflict, unfortunately, they're blamed for everything. They're the target of the hatred. They're the first businesses to get burned down. They're not going to want to come back. It's a shame. It really is a shame. I have some statistics to share with you. And it is Sunday. And I'm sure that some of you have gone to church and probably on your way back from church and are probably listening in. And if you are, thank you. And please pray for me. Pray for me. Pray for my family. Pray for our country. Pray for our leaders, both the ones that we like and the ones that we hate. Because even the ones that we hate are put there by God. That's what the Bible says, and I believe it. But New England has come a long way. And unfortunately, not in the way that we want to. People may have more money. People may have more resources. But spiritually, do people have more? Do you know that most of the major Protestant faiths that are thriving in America had their start in the New England area? Mormonism, Jehovah Witnesses, Pentecostals, Seventh-day Adventists, of which I'm a member. They all got that particular message was revealed to them from here. I came here from Hawaii, and many times I identify as someone from Hawaii rather than someone from Puerto Rico. I lived in Hawaii longer than I lived in Puerto Rico. But the missionaries that came to Hawaii were from Massachusetts. The code of aloha, that the whole kind of philosophy of aloha, comes from the Christian missionaries that came from New England. And so I have this special love for Christian mission in New England, because this is where a lot of the sincere, fervent search for God came from. How far we have fallen, ladies and gentlemen. How far we have fallen. According to a survey done in 2017, this is pre-pandemic now, less than 23% of all people in New England, in Massachusetts specifically, go to church on a regular basis. And in this area per se, like the Attleboro, Fall River, New Bedford area, I think that number was closer to like 15%, which is shocking. And the number would be substantially less, significantly less, if it weren't for the ethnic communities that have come to Boston that are basically propping up a lot of these churches, including mine, Seventh-day Adventist. Most of the members are people that come from other countries. So if I were to ask you, how many people do you think, if I were to do a survey on the streets of Massachusetts, and I were to ask people, do you believe in God? What percentage do you think would say they believe in God? Don't be surprised if I tell you that it would be less than 40% of the people that you encounter say, I believe in God. Less than 23% of people in Massachusetts go to church on a regular basis. That means 7 to 8 out of every 10 people out there don't go to church. What does that mean? That means that children are growing up without knowing, without learning about God in any flavor. So you see all these beautiful churches. All these churches were built back in the 60s probably, maybe 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. There are no new churches being built now, especially not in this area. True, you do have a couple of mega churches that show that have propped up, but not too many. Usually they rent warehouses or big spaces. But you don't see people building beautiful churches like the beautiful churches that I see here in Attleboro, beautiful churches made of stone and brick, monuments to the faith and sacrifice of the people who contributed $5, $10, $20, $30, $40, $50, $100 at a time. Many of them gave significant proportions of their income, significant percentages of their income in order to build a structure that endures to this day. And these days it's empty. Because only 2 out of every 10 people walking the streets of Massachusetts actually go to church on a regular basis. What does that mean? That means that eventually you get more and more people who don't believe in God. And when people don't believe in God and they have no fear of God, they have no fear of man. These are the people that are burning and destroying all that you see around you. These are the people that find the message of Black Lives Matter attractive. An organization founded by 3 people, 2 of them were atheists. And I don't know if the sexual orientation is a factor, But one of their concrete principles was the destruction of the nuclear family. So I have a problem with that. If they're gay and they're dedicated to the destruction of a nuclear family, I have a big problem with that. Are those two connected? I want to say no, but I don't know what's in the hearts of those people. Because I know I do have friends that are conservatives, politically conservatives, and they're gay, and they've made a personal choice about their lives. It's their choice. You know, I'm not gonna judge them because it's a choice that they've made. I have a problem when they want to indoctrinate the rest of us and basically shove their life choices in my face and force me to accept them in my churches and in my lifestyle. That in my life, that's when I have a problem with it, a big problem with it. Because to me, it's the same as like saying, from now on, I have to smoke dope in order to be cool, in order to be accepted. I have to smoke marijuana. I have to drink at parties. I'm legally obligated to drink at parties when I consider drinking wrong. I consider it, it leads to all kinds of issues. A lot of misery comes from people who drink. And so because I love my brothers and my sisters, I don't drink. I was a vegetarian until this whole COVID thing came up, and then all of a sudden it was difficult to make two meals at once. But if someone chooses to eat meat, that's their choice. I'm not going to legislate vegetarianism on people because it's better for the environment. These are all the things. When I was at the protest and I saw these young people, this young man dousing himself in what I presume to be animal blood. I don't know if it was real or not, but he wanted to create the impression that it was real, so I'm going to assume that it was. He then proceeds to consume the heart of an animal. He declares it to be a human heart. And then he invokes the name of the devil. Kalimar is a devil. It's a demon. It's the Indian god of disorder and chaos. He's invoking the god of chaos at an event to destroy those of us who are saying, we also have a voice. They're saying, we must be destroyed because we dare to go against what they say. That's pure communism, my friends. That's pure fascism. Those counter-protesters were fascists and communists. Because if you saw the people that were at the Super Happy Fun America protest against Democrat violence, we were a rainbow of people, a racial rainbow. We were the representatives of America. And yet, we were the ones that were called Nazis. We're the ones that were called fascists. We're the ones that were assaulted. We're the ones that they said must be destroyed. We've got some major problems, my friends. We've got some major problems coming down the pike. And again, if you are not part of the solution, you are directly part of the problem. Your vote really makes a difference. It makes such a huge difference. This election for president is going to be decided by not millions of votes, not hundreds of thousands of votes, but quite possibly tens of thousands or even thousands of votes, and in some areas probably even hundreds of votes. Imagine that an entire state, the outcome, the electoral delegates for that state are decided by the votes of 300 people who decided, you know what, I am going to go ahead and vote today. I'm going to go to the polls or I'm going to vote early and submitted a legitimate vote. Because only God knows how many illegitimate votes are out there right now, how the ballot boxes have been stuffed, because the left has seen this as an opportunity to, you know, swing things their way. if we hand President Trump a resounding victory, even if he doesn't win, even if he doesn't win in Massachusetts, but if he loses by very little, that in itself will be such a message to the left that it is time that they start listening. But even then, I don't think they're going to listen, because I think they think they're going to win, and they think that that they don't have to listen because they are very well funded, and it's not by you and me, my friends. You're listening to America in the Now, in the first hour. We'll be right back after the hour. You are welcome to call in. Feel free. It's 508-222-1320. Yeah. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. And now here's a song that I love, America in the Now. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Wow. Yeah, you've got dead air. I have always been someone who wears his heart on his sleeve. Those who care much need to do much. If you don't care, then nothing will sway you. But if you care about your country, if you care about your community, when you look out on the streets and you see children and you want a good life for them, then you too will be overcome by emotion when you hear a song like that. Right now I'm on Boston.com and I'm looking at the percentages of people who voted, and right now it appears that the Attleboro, Foxboro, Norton area, we're averaging a little less than 60% voter turnout so far. I guess that's not bad, considering that November 3rd is just you know, a few days away, 2 days from now. And I'm hoping that these percentages will be in the 90s. Because if every single conservative voter turns out in all of Massachusetts, I don't know if we have enough votes to overcome the numbers of liberal leftist voters in cities like Cambridge and Boston and other places like that. And so the chances of a Trump victory in Massachusetts are pretty slim. But like I said before, just because Trump cannot win Massachusetts does not mean that we can't vote in Republican legislators. Now, this election cycle, I think it's a mulligan. I mean, there's nothing we can do. We can't do it. There's no do-overs. We're going to have to wait for 2 years to prepare, to organize, and to be ready for the next cycle. Because quite frankly, this pandemic basically took everyone by surprise, and the Republican Party in Massachusetts was not ready. They were not ready for this. They were not ready for the issues. They didn't move fast enough to compensate, and so therefore, most of the Democratic incumbents in Massachusetts are running unopposed. It's a damn shame that's the case. But there are still, if there are 57.7%, if there's, I guess I should, sorry, I'm stumbling over my words. I'm trying to say them so fast. Of the voters in, like, for example, the city of Norton, 57.7% have already either applied for an absentee ballot, or have voted. That doesn't mean that 60% have already voted, but they have an absentee ballot, which I'm hoping that they are going to, you know, use it. If they do, then the chances of a Republican being elected to our you know, our congressional district is better than if not. If people just default, unfortunately, we are going to be it's going to be a massacre, and unfortunately, that massacre is going to be interpreted as a mandate, and that's the part that scares me. It scares the bejesus out of me when I hear politicians say we have a mandate, especially when it's it's not my side that's saying that, because that basically they're saying we can do what we think is best because everyone agrees with us, or those people who didn't agree with us didn't get organized enough to be able to resist us. So the last thing I want to hear is some Democratic candidate saying that they have a mandate in Massachusetts to limit gun ownership, to increase taxes, to undo any credits, and to institute mandates to force us to do things. For example, the mask thing. I'm going to talk about the mask thing, but I think I'm going to do it after the break because I've got quite a bit to say about that. And you may agree or disagree with me, but we'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Here's a little blue eyes for you. Chairman of the board. Oh, my goodness. Frank Sinatra would be tarred and feathered if he dared to say this. A little bit different than what I usually play, but I love Frank Sinatra. I think I was probably the only kid in the ghetto that would listen to classical music on AM radio in New York City. I would turn it on, and I would listen to, WABC radio at the time was just regular music. But as I fiddled with the dial, I discovered a classical music station, which I loved listening to. And then on Sunday nights, they used to have the Polish Polka Hour. And for an hour on Saturday nights, you could listen to Polish polkas, and I loved Polish polkas. It was fun music. It was fun to listen to. I made the mistake of telling one of my friends that I like this music, and I was showing him, and the kid started laughing at me. That's when I realized that maybe not everyone likes polka music, but I certainly do. I still do. So I wanted to talk a little bit about masks and the mask mandate. When I was at the protest a couple weeks ago at the Super Happy Fun America group, and I'm going to bring up their information because Super Happy Fun America. Let's see what I can get. I like these people. They are doing their best to present an alternative view, and every single funding platform that's out there has refused to facilitate payments to them. They're considered or called by many. They've been labeled by the left as a white supremacist group advocating violence, and I'm telling you that is the furthest thing that they are. They are a multiracial group that is advocating for choices, for people to be able to make their own choices, and resisting the mandate of the left, where if you dare to go against them, you'll be shut down. And so far, the left has been very, very successful in shutting them down. And so today is Sunday, and I mentioned this last week. If you are a good tither and you're a faithful tither, and you return 10% of your earnings to your church, God bless you, you'll get that back and more in so many different ways. It's a biblical promise, and I believe it. But if you would consider doing a tithe of a tithe and throwing a couple bucks to the Super Happy Fun America, this is not an endorsement of any kind. I'm not getting anything from them. They don't even know that I'm doing this, by the way. I'm doing this because I feel it's the right thing to do. When someone is doing what I feel is the right thing to do, we need to support them. We need to pray for them, right? Because a lot of people say, oh, you're in trouble. I'll pray for you. Yeah, that's fine and dandy. But even the Bible says that if someone is hungry and cold, and you say, be warm and filled, and you don't give them the things that they need, then your words are meaningless. You have to give people what they need. If someone is cold, give them a blanket or give them a coat. If they're hungry, feed them. That's what the Bible says. It's basic stuff. So the Super Happy Fun America group, the only way that they can accept donations is through a check. And if you'd like to make a check to them, it's Super Happy Fun America, P.O. Box 21, Woburn, Massachusetts, 01801. Again, Super Happy Fun America, P.O. Box 21, Woburn, Mass., 01801. This is not a product endorsement. I'm not endorsing them. I just believe in them. And they don't even know that I'm doing this. And I'll probably tell them later on. And you know what? If they get some checks from people and they say, hey, Henry, thanks for helping us out, my response is going to be, I put my money and I put my heart and I put my mouth where my heart is. And I hope you feel the same way. So about masks. Sorry, I digressed here for a moment. Let's talk about masks. In my church, we've had to, our church services, you're going to find this amazing, are incredible depending on your perspective. But pre-COVID, we would go to church. Our service would start at 9:30 in the morning on Saturdays because I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. We would have Sabbath school, right? We'd have like a little worship service from 9:30 to 10. And then at 10 o'clock, the lesson would begin where we have an open discussion of the lesson. It's actually a lot of fun. That I enjoy that more than anything else. We would talk for about an hour, and then it would I'm going to play that one. Sorry. I just saw something pop up on my screen. I said, yeah, that's the one I want. We would talk for about an hour, and then at 11 o'clock, the divine service would begin. And we have, you know, a program in place, it's song service. We'd have a portion where people would talk about basically their week and asking for prayers. And it was a way to get to know people and kind of what their struggles are. And if there's a need, you know, it was a way that we could find out if there was a need as well. And then there would be a sermon and a little bit of song service at the end. It would usually end around sometimes 1:30, 2 o'clock. And it wasn't unheard of for it to end at 3. Then we would have a potluck, so people didn't have to leave. They could stay and eat with us, and there was always food. I mean, we're an international church, so we had international potlucks. You could find Filipino food, American Southern food, regular like Spanish food, and just like what I call regular all American New England food. Whatever you wanted, and it was there. It's all vegetarian, and it was just fun to go and eat and fellowship with my brothers and my sisters. And then sometimes we'd have an activity for the young people in the afternoon, and when the sun went down, we'd basically go home. So it was from 9:30 in the morning to about 6 or 7 at night. And sometimes we'd go to people's houses afterwards and eat some more and watch movies and play games. Now, of course, with this whole COVID situation, forget about potlucks. So those are gone. We have to limit the number of attendees in our church. Luckily for us, we have two floors, so we can... If we hit our maximum on the first floor, we have set up a television screen and a simulcast so that people can watch the service downstairs and we can have another, handful of people. We can't pack them in like we used to, but then again, people aren't coming to church like they used to either. People are staying away, or some people have just basically fallen out of the habit of going to church. But the one thing that we have to do when we're in church is... To the church's credit, I mean, there's a screening process. So before someone can walk into the sanctuary, we take their temperatures. We have them submit a questionnaire. We track their information and their phone number so that if someone does come up positive, we can go back and trace and see, who was there and kind of let people know such and such was positive. You may want to isolate for 2 weeks or however. We also have to wear masks in the sanctuary. And that can be difficult. I'll tell you, it's not... For me, considering, if you know the kind of person that I am, I'm a bundle of energy. I mean, even as I'm talking, my foot is shaking. It's hard for me to sit still. I'm like with little chihuahuas. And so to sit and to have a mask on for 2 hours right now, which is our service, we start at 9:50. We try to end around 12. So that's 2 hours and 10 minutes. And if the speaker goes on, then it becomes 2.5 hours. At that point, I'm like, I can't. It's like I've got ants in my pants, and I gotta get up. I cannot sit for more than that amount of time. We had a speaker that came in and talked for until about 2:45. At that point, I took my mask off in the church. And even then, that wasn't the hint to the speaker that he had gone on too long. But I think he finally got the hint. But for me, I mean, it is so difficult for me to sit there for more than 2 hours with a mask on. My heart goes out to those people who have to work all day long wearing a mask. It hurts my eyes to have a mask on. When I exhale, my glasses clog up, and my eyes start to tear because of the water flowing. You know, the air flowing over my eyes causes it to tear. It is very uncomfortable for me. I choose not to wear a mask in public. And so when I'm walking around, like I work in Cambridge, I actually have a job, and I go to Cambridge to work. And when I go to Cambridge, when I go from my car to the office, I have a mask around my neck because I'm going to comply in that fashion. But I will, I'll walk around. And it's as if I had leprosy. Because when people see me walking down, especially in Cambridge, little leftist Cambridge, they see me and it's as if I'm like the devil. they have pressed themselves up against the wall as I pass by. So that way there's at least 15 feet, and I'm not exaggerating, 15 feet of distance between them and me. No, they're obviously trying to make a point. And I just look at them and snicker as I walk past. Luckily, they don't say anything to me. I was mentioning earlier that I was at the Super Happy Fun America protest. We were at the barriers. I was waving at people, you know, and I'm yelling to them, "I'm glad you're here. You know, thank you for participating." I don't know if they heard me or not, but at least that was my intention. I was trying to be friendly, and there were some girls on the other side, and I heard them yelling, "Where's your mask?" And I said, "I've got one," and they said, "Put it on." I said, "I don't need to. I'm in public, but I have one." And I reached into my pocket and I showed them that I had one, and I waved it around, and then I put it back and I kept waving, and they were not happy about that. For me, the mask represents more than just a barrier. I wear a mask, and I said this in my church. If me choosing to not wear a mask is a tripping stone for my brother or my sister, then I will wear a mask to comply so that they can focus on the church service instead of worrying about whether I'm going to give them COVID-19 or not, or as I like to call it, corona, the Chinese Wuhan flu. And so I will comply and I will wear a mask. If I walk into a store and they say, "You have to wear a mask," I choose not to make an issue at that point of the mask mandate. I will put a mask on. I will put it on loosely. I will go through the motions of putting on a mask. And so, like, the top part, I have to tie it. I have a cloth mask, so I'll tap the top part so it'll cover my nose and my mouth, but the bottom part, I'm not going to tie it. And if someone approaches me and says, "You don't have your mask on properly," my response is going to be, "That's your opinion, and I would get away from me if I were you." And if they continue to say something, I tell my wife, "You know what? I'm just going to say, I'm already positive, and so it's over for me, but give me a hug and wish me well." And then I will try to embrace them, to see how quickly they will, backpedal. But I will not wear a mask in public. I will not wear a mask where I'm not mandated to wear a mask. If I have to wear a mask in the store, okay, I'll wear it. If I have to wear a mask in my church, okay, I'll wear it. But I don't believe that a mask is going to do anything except make me uncomfortable. If I'm positive, if I'm sick, then I should wear a mask. They do this in Asian countries. If you're sick, you wear a mask out of courtesy to others, which is wonderful. I like that. But no one forces them to wear a mask. And this is the problem. If people get used to being forced to do things, at what point does it end? If you're forced to take a vaccine, and that vaccine has other things in it, What if it has tracking a little, I'm sorry, it's not that, I don't go to conspiracy breakfasts, but I do get the notes. I get the memo afterward. What if these vaccines have other things? What if they have GPS trackers in them? What if they have other medications designed to increase compliance? What if they're filled with sedatives? Because the government is afraid that people are going to panic about this, and so they're going to pump people up with sedatives. Who's to say that they're not going to do any of this? Who's to say that they are? I'm not saying that they are, and I'm not saying that there's some conspiracy. What I'm saying is, when someone has the power to mandate something, where does the power end? Where is the limit of that power? And the answer is there is no limit. Once they can mandate, they can do anything, and you are under their control. That's a problem. We'll be right back.
You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. WARA AM 1320. Bum, ba, bum, bum, ba, bum. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. And I am at that point where I don't care what you think about me. I don't give a darn if you agree with me or not. And as a matter of fact, if we disagree, so what? If we agree, so what? I don't care. I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to say what I feel when it's appropriate. There is nothing that torques me off when people think that simply because they have a venue that they can push their opinions on others. Okay, so I just turned off Joan Jett. I'm trying to be delicate here because I don't want to bring up a situation that someone can identify. But let me just put it this way, and I'm going to try to be as delicate and as polite as I can, taking into consideration who I am. You're welcome to your opinion, brother. You're welcome to your opinion, sister. And I encourage you to express yourself at an appropriate venue. But there are places when talking about politics is not appropriate. We can talk about values. We can talk about morals. And different people have different opinions. But for me, morals are pretty absolute. You either are doing the right thing or you're doing the wrong thing. You're either living a righteous life or you're not. You cannot be a voice of moral authority if you cheat on your taxes. You cannot be someone to look up to when you're committing fraud. I'm sorry. You can't have it both ways. You can't, and you won't. And too often in my life, because I don't want to hurt people's feelings, when they say things that are totally wrong and objectionable, I've kept my mouth shut because I don't want to make trouble. I don't want to embarrass someone. But the days and the times where I would keep my mouth shut, those days are over. They've been over for a while. And if there's something I don't like and I think is wrong, I'm going to say it. And if you don't like it, and you know what? Okay. You're welcome to come to me and tell me why. But if I'm in the right and I know I'm in the right, you best have a really good argument. And the argument can't be, you hurt my feelings. I'm sorry. No way. No way. On this radio show, I encourage people to call in who disagree with me. And you guys have heard me when people like my friend Marcus, who I thought was going to call today but didn't, when he calls in, he and I sometimes go back and forth, and it can get pretty nasty sometimes. Not nasty as like, we don't insult each other, but it gets pretty heated. I still respect him. But I don't like it. And it torques me off when someone calls my president's decisions foolishness, expecting that everyone agrees with this person. Not going to happen. For me, it's not foolishness. And even then, there are certain venues where, you know, it's not appropriate to talk about politics. On Saturdays, I try to make it a point to not talk about politics. I do my best. Definitely in church, that is like the one rule I will not violate. No politics at church, because people have different political opinions. And the last thing I want to do is offend people because they have different political opinions. That's just not what I do. Others do that, and it turks me off. And you know, I'll say something sometimes to them, and I may very well put my foot down even more later. But it's pretty clear, especially recently, that I have very little tolerance for that. If you have a political opinion, there are certain places where it's appropriate and other places where it's not. At work, I don't like talking about politics. If someone approaches me like individually and wants to know my opinion about something and wants to talk, oh yeah, I'm all about that. I want to hear other people's opinions. I really am curious as to why people believe the things that they believe, what their knowledge base is, what their experiences are, you know, what their life story is. Because we all come from different places. But I will never ridicule someone simply because they have a different opinion than I do. And that's the part that really gets me upset, when people belittle others simply because of their political opinion. I challenge people. And I think certain decisions are stupid. And I have poked fun at political figures because, you know what? They're fair game. They're public figures. They're fair game, man. AOC, I will just, you know, jam into her. I'm looking forward to her being a waitress or a bartender again. She knows bartending. She's done bartending for 8 years. I think she will be the greatest bartender in New York City when she goes back to bartending. But there's nothing that she can teach us about the environment. She knows nothing about complicated issues of trade. She doesn't know what it is to hire people and fire people and manage payroll. She's never done it. So when she talks about the redistribution of income, she knows absolutely nothing about what she's talking about. She is parroting party lines. She is fair game. If I'm in someone's home and someone asks me about my political opinions, you know, I'll share with them. But I'm not going to stand up and start spouting stuff. It's just not appropriate. What I want to do is I want to engage people in conversation. Now, I realize that some people are better at that than others, but I'm never going to shut you down. Never. I am never going to ridicule you because you have a difference of opinion than I do in public. Never. If I see some fool flying a Biden flag from his car, I'm just going to drive past him and probably have like a crooked smile as I may even shake my head as I drove by. And that'll be the extent. I have a First Amendment right to express myself, and that will be the extent. Am I going to go and block him? Am I going to rip the flag off of his car? That's theft of personal property. Am I going to insult him or her? And am I going to threaten them simply because I don't agree with them? Never. Very few times, if at all, have you heard or seen conservatives at political rallies doing that to the left, to people on the left. You have not seen that. And the times that that has occurred, the media has blown it super out of proportion, because they're so rare when it happens, they're gonna plaster it everywhere. But this kind of stuff happens all the time. A friend of mine, he had a Trump sticker on his car. That's his car. That's his property. He is expressing his opinion, his political opinion. He's expressing his support. When I go to Cambridge and I see all these Biden bumper stickers, do you think I make it my personal mission to go and whip out my buck knife and peel off all the Biden stickers because I find them offensive? I mean, I saw this video on Facebook. It made me laugh. I mean, I laughed. I'm thinking, who raised this kid? It's some 20-something-year-old woman crying in her car because she passed some people that have Trump flags. And she says it's so threatening, these racists. I feel threatened. I feel like I'm in danger from these people. These are people that have a Trump flag. And she says she feels threatened. Why? I'll tell you why. Because the left uses that as justification to shut us down. Because obviously, since I have a difference of opinion, I'm a threat. And if I'm a threat, that means I'm dangerous. And if I'm dangerous, I need to be taken care of. I need to be put away, arrested, or somehow re-indoctrinated so that I can toe the party line. When the state has that kind of power, when the community has that kind of power, you're in danger, my friends. You are in danger. Because that group can turn on you very easily. Look at what happened to the mayor of Portland, right? He supports all the protests. What did they do? They set fire to his apartment. He had to flee. They were going to take him. If they could have grabbed him, they would have taken him down. The community that he thought he was part of turned on him. So my friend, with a Trump sticker, someone peels it off because they felt that they're justified in defacing someone else's property simply because they don't agree with my friend's political stance. So my friend, he's a little bit more rough around the edges than I am. I love him. He's my kind of guy. Because he would do things that I would want to do, but I would never do. But he did it. So I admire him for that. Hey, Wayne. So where there was white on the bumper sticker that had been peeled off, he put a very simple phrase. Well, first he got another Trump bumper sticker and put it on the other side. So his Trump bumper sticker is still there. But in a permanent marker, he put, how can I put this without, F-C-K, B-L-M. And when I saw his bumper sticker the other day, because I parked behind him, I thought, wow. My friend Wayne, he didn't get mad. He didn't get even. He got ahead. He upped the game. He's all in when it comes to this kind of stuff. That's the thing that I admire about my friends who do this. Because many of us are at this point now where we're at this point where, you know what, if you don't like who I am and what I believe in, then too bad. Just like Joan Jett. You know what? I don't care if you say my reputation is shot. You're listening to America in the Now. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. I like this song. I really hope that on November 3rd, when Biden is dealt a knockout blow of 49 states voting overwhelmingly for Trump, and he has no choice whatsoever to concede to Trump, I hope that Trump plays this song. You're listening to America Now. Oh, yes, indeed. Right now, I don't have a Facebook feed because obviously I've been banned from Facebook for daring to not toe the party line of the leftists. But if you could see me on Facebook, you would see some old dude trying to bust some moves. And I think I still got some moves left. But, you know, I am 60 years old and I can't move the way I used to. But, man, I love music that stirs the soul. We've got conflicts coming up, man. And this is the time when I think we have to be true to ourselves. There comes a point when you can no longer just let people say things and you say nothing because you don't want to offend. There comes a point when you have to say, you know what? I respect your opinion, but we have a difference of opinion, brother. You know what? I appreciate what you're saying. But I see things a little bit differently than you. That just, we don't do that enough. And it's time that we start challenging people to let them know that what they're saying and what they're doing is not okay. That them running roughshod over my rights, running roughshod over my opinions, simply because they think that I'm not going to say anything because they've gotten away with it for so long. No, that's done. I'm done with that. From now on and for a long time now, if there's something I don't like, I'm going to call it out. If I see hypocrisy, right, and someone trying to get away with stuff that's unfair and taking advantage of others, I'm not going to be quiet because I don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. This happens way too often, and I hear about this stuff all the time. Where, well, you know, I didn't say anything because I didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. It's I am 100% transparent. I'm not going to offend anyone deliberately. I'm not going to try to hurt people's feelings. I'm not going to be, you know, crude and rude and abrupt. But I am definitely going to let you know where I stand. Especially if you're trying to make it a point that you're trying to run roughshod over others with your opinions, I'm going to stand up and say, uh-uh, buddy, I'm sorry. There are others of us who do not agree with you. That takes a lot of courage, my friends. But if enough of us stand up and say, uh-uh, se acabó el guiso, as they say in Spanish, the stew is done. There's no more. That's it. There will be a change. And I think it'll be a change for the better, where people will think twice before they just make pronunciations and try to run roughshod over the rights of other people. I look forward to a more polite political discussion. I really do. I look forward to an opportunity to vigorously debate the opposition in a way that allows both points of view to be expressed. Because if my view is so dangerous, then why are you trying to shut me down? If Facebook thinks that I am so dangerous, right? Obviously, I must be dangerous. I am probably one of the most dangerous people right now because they shut me down in Facebook. Why? Because I beg to say, no, I don't agree with this nonsense. So what do? They shut me down. This is what society is doing to us. It is time for us, the American people, to stand up and say, se acabó. Last year, I was actually tempted to have a congressional run, but I decided not to because for a lot of reasons. I thought, you know what? All politics is local. I'd rather be involved to improve my community rather than pontificating and grandstanding in Congress. But one of the things I thought about and fantasized about is if I were elected to Congress and AOC was still there, I would love to go to AOC, point my finger at her, and say, ¡Cállate la boca! Which is Spanish for shut your mouth. I would love the opportunity to do that. Because what is she going to do? Call me a racist? I'm old enough to be her father. And she's probably never been scolded in her life. She's a little child of privilege. Her father was an architect. She doesn't come from the hood. She doesn't know what it is to be involved in a fight. I do. Many fights. When I was a kid, for those of you who listen to the show, you probably heard this story before, but I'm going to say it again because I do have new listeners. When I was a kid growing up in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, I was probably the only kid that went to school with a tie and a white shirt on. And all too often, I would come home with a dirty shirt and maybe missing a tie because it was one of those clip-on deals. And my mother would say, what happened? I'd say, I fell down on my way home from school. And she'd say, my love, I'm going to take you to the doctor because you fall down a lot. Yeah, I was being knocked to the ground by other little kids. Little black kids who saw me, another kid of color, but not as dark as them, as representative of all the things that they hear in the media that, you know, the white man is putting them down. And because I'm not as black as they are, I must be white. Therefore, I'm the enemy. Therefore, they're going to... I'm to blame for all of their problems. So the only way they can get any kind of satisfaction is to beat me up because I speak like a white person, because I'm a good student, because I'm the teacher's pet, because I'm interested in learning. I'm an engineer. You know what? I know I'm smart in some things. And I get beaten up. And in the beginning, there was nothing I felt like I could do nothing except except the fact that I was going to get beaten up every day in school by the same kids. And there was never one. It was always two, three, and four, and sometimes even five. They took a perverse pleasure in beating me up. And you know, as an adult now, I understand a lot of the dynamics. I don't really blame them. I mean, you know what? They're the product of their upbringing. There was a lot of stuff going on in their lives. And the only way that they could express their frustration is to taking it out on something that they saw as representative of what they wanted to aspire to, but in their minds, they couldn't. And I understood all that. But even as a kid, I realized, I got to put a stop to this. I can't do this every day. I can't be beaten up every day. I only have so many shirts. My parents don't have unlimited funds to buy me, you know, new pants and shirts every day. And so I came up with a plan. And my plan was to learn the way of my enemy. And each of them, the five kids that would make it a point to beat me up at school, I started following them home from school. Many of them were latchkey kids. I would follow them, but they wouldn't see me. I'd stay, I was like a secret agent. I'd stay, you know, 20 feet behind them. I'd duck behind cars. They never saw me because when you're a kid, you don't expect someone to be following you. You develop paranoia later on in life like I do. I'm still paranoid. I would learn their habits. I would learn their modus operandi. And one by one, just as they were reaching to the lock, all of a sudden this brown blur would appear out of nowhere and fists would fly and I would beat the living daylights out of this person and there was nothing that they could do. I was full of fury. And if I'd been older, God forbid, I probably would have killed one of them. One by one, I took each of them down and I warned them, I know where you live. And I know how you your path to get to your house. If you fight me again in school, when you least expect it, I'm coming back. And this time it's for keeps. And I have a way with words. And even as a child, as a little kid, 11 years old, my words, after I thrashed them, I spoke to them in the language they understood. Then I spoke to them in the language I understood. I will be back if I need to be. After a while, there were other kids that would beat me up when this crop would go. But after a while, word got out that Henry was a vengeful person, Henry was dangerous, and Henry was not to be trifled with because Henry at that point knew how to fight. And I could take on one person easily. And sometimes two and three I learned to take on as well. And that's how I've lived my life. I can take a lot, just like my friends and many of my people who are listening. But there comes a point when things are going to change and the plans are going to be put into place to make things right again. Vote November 3rd. Vote for me for state senate. If you see Feeney on the ballot, write-in candidate, put Henry Roman. I want to see 2,000 votes at least. I want the Democrats to get a message that this is not a mandate. They just got lucky this time. It is time for us to fight. And we do that at the ballot box. And if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. You don't have a right to express yourself. That's the way it is. Take care. God bless. I will see you next week here at 1 p.m. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. God bless and keep fighting.